Fisher. Then, the quantum leap from mind to no mind. Talks given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 10.
Beloved Bhagwan, one day, while Nansen was living in a little hut in the mountains, a strange monk visited him just as he was preparing to go to his work in the field. Nansen welcomed him, saying, "Please make yourself at home. Cook anything you like for your lunch. Then bring some of the leftover food to me along the road leading to my workplace." Nansen worked hard until evening and came home very hungry. The stranger had cooked and enjoyed a good meal by himself, then thrown away all provisions and broken all the utensils. Nansen found the monk sleeping peacefully in the empty hut, but when he stretched his own tired body beside the stranger's, the latter got up and went away. Years later, Nansen told the anecdote to his disciples with the comment, "He was such a good monk, I miss him even now."
Manita. Zen is anything but unkindness. But ungratefulness. It is pure compassion and compassion is tested only when you think it is almost impossible to be compassionate. This is small anecdote about a great Zen master, Nansen. Has tremendous implication for you all to understand, not intellectually only, but your whole being. Feel the meaning in the every cell of your body, mind and soul. It will be very difficult to find such a story in the history of any other religion. One day, while Nansen was living in a little hut in the mountains, a strange monk visited him just as he was preparing to go his work in the field. Each and every word has to be understood clearly. the strangers is not accepted by people. Just his being strange creates fear in you, because he is unpredictable, and leaving his hut to his working field telling this strange man to rest needs immense trust, a trust that even if betrayed, cannot be destroyed. He did not ask even the name of the man, nor from where he is coming, nor what is his purpose, what does he want from him. No question at all. Such is the approach of Zen. No question at all, but a deep acceptance of the strangeness of everything. This is just symbolic. Do you know the bamboos outside Buddha Hall? Do you know these people and the clouds that pass over and the rain? Everything is strange, and that is the beauty of it. Just as the bamboos and the flowers and the roses and the clouds and the stars are accepted without asking their names, their caste, their country, their race, the same should be the approach to human beings. Why do you discriminate? Why you ask a human being his name, his purpose? Just so that you can drop the fear of the stranger. In fact, everybody is a stranger. Even your wife or your husband, are your children? Do you know your children? They are as strangers as the bamboos, or perhaps even more, because they come from you, but they are not from you. They are coming from the beyond. But you did not ask a child why you have come. That is the approach of Zen. Nansen did not ask the strange man. On the contrary, he welcomed him. saying, please make yourself at home. In a small anecdote, in few words, the very essence can be expressed. Make yourself at home. A man like Nansen does not possess anything. The whole existence is his home. This small hut cannot confine him, cannot become his possession. He said to the stranger, please make yourself at home, cook anything you like for your lunch, then bring some of the leftover food to me along the road leading to my workplace. Do you see, he is not saying prepare my lunch, he is saying prepare your lunch and if something is left over, bring it to me to the field where I am going to work. Nansen worked hard until evening and came home very hungry. The stranger had cooked and enjoyed a good meal by himself, then thrown away all provisions and broken all utensils. Nansen found the monk sleeping peacefully in the empty hut. But when he stretched his own tired body beside the stranger, the latter got up and went away. Even then, Nansen did not ask, what happened to the leftover food? Where are all the utensils? And where are you going? A non-questioning attitude towards existence. Such a pure innocence that he must be doing whatever he feels right to do. Years later, Nansen told the anecdote to his disciples with the comment, he was such a good man. I miss him even now. This is the very essence of compassion, of love, of trust. You cannot betray By betraying it, you are betraying yourself. That strange monk had done everything to destroy nonsense trust in humanity. But on the contrary, nonsense trust has passed through a fire test. Years later he said he was such a good man. I miss him even now. If you can understand the approach of no conditioning, no judgment, there was every possibility that nonsense would have judged that fellow proved to be absolutely unworthy of my trust. Then your trust is very small. Nonsense trust is as big as the whole sky. What harm he can do? Of course he missed the meal. He has broken his utensils. But these are small things. Only mediocre minds take care of these things. People who have an inner richness, who know their kingdom of God, will not be bothered by such things. That fellow must have his own reasons. Who I am to judge . At least he did not kill me. He did not burn the hut. He was such a good fellow. Nonsense says, I miss him even now. His generosity, his peace, his silently moving away without bothering me, compassion can be only unlimited. If you put a limit on your compassion, you are deceiving yourself. Because beyond the limit, the doubt is waiting. Beyond the limit begins the untrust. What harm he has done that you should lose a precious experience of trust? In fact, he has given an opportunity to nonsense to see himself, that he is not angry, that he is not suspicious, that his compassion is not limited. He is thankful to that stranger, and later on he says, he was such a good man. I miss him ever now. If you can experience the point, your whole life will be transformed. Then this whole existence is no more strange. It becomes very familiar. You are at home everywhere. Nobody, not even animals, birds, this cuckoo, these silently standing bamboos, they all become friends. You start living in a poetry. You start living in a dance which knows no doubt. Religion has been giving a false coin to people called belief. If you look in the dictionaries, belief and trust and faith seem to be synonymous. They are not. Belief is always in some hypothesis. Faith is always out of fear. Trust has a totally different quality. It is out of understanding, out of love. Once you start living out of love, only then you know what religion is. Zen is the purest form of religion. Manisha has asked, beloved Bhagwan, is this a story about a master's compassion and equanimity in the face of his trust being abused? Or is it a beautiful illustration of benefiting from being with a master without being needy and dependent? Certainly it is your voice I hear when I read nonsense saying, he was such a good man. I miss him even now. Manisha, nonsense has missed only one good man, I had missed thousands, whom I have loved, whom I have trusted, and who has not only broken one of my meals, my utensils, who had broken everything that they could. They had burnt my heart. Still, I miss them. Just today, I heard that one of sannyasins has written a book making the whole experiment here condensed . The book has been published for 2.5 years before. It came to my notice today because the sannyasin, the woman, a beautiful woman, a very nice heart, has informed me that she is coming in September. In the book she has written that I was naive, childish, that's why I had become a disciple. Now I am mature and I am absolutely free from sannyas. I wonder why she is coming there. But if she comes back, nobody should ask her a single question about the book, the lies that she has spoken in it. It is all past. In 2.5 years, so much water has gone down the Ganges. Who bothers? Even if by the evening you come back home, the whole day going as stray here and there, you are welcome. Thousands of sannyasins have betrayed, not me, themselves, for 5 years. American government has bribed few people to say things which are absolutely untrue, because for 3.5 years I was silent and those people have confessed to the government that I arranged their marriage. I have not been able to arrange my own marriage, and I don't think that there is any possibility anymore. Why should I bother about arranging anybody's marriage? And I had not seen those people. I don't remember their face. I have never talked with them. Because for 3.5 years I was silent. And even when I am speaking, publicly. I don't see people individually. And marriage is their personal affair. If anything, I can arrange for the divorce, not for the marriage. That is my whole philosophy. Divorce. But those two sannyasins got enough bribe and were ready to stand before the court that I have arranged their marriage. I have not said anything. Even if they come there, they will be welcome. Although I have been dragged because of them from jail to jail, poisoned because of them, fined $500,000, and I don't have a single dollar. I have not even seen the face of a single dollar. I have not touched money for almost 30 years. I don't know who paid the fine. Of course, other sannyasins were so much hurt that within 10 minutes $500,000 were paid. Even the judge could not believe his eyes. They were not thinking that that much money. I will be able. I had nothing. And such people are not few, but many, whom I gave respect and love, and still I love them. But they have done everything to harm my approach to life. They are afraid even to mention that they had been with me. Just the other day I received a brochure from Swami Anand Tirtha. in which 12 sannyasis had joined to make a therapist team. Anand Tirtha, who lived here with me for 13 years, writes in his introduction that he has been with an Indian mystic for 13 years. He has not the courage even to tell who is this Indian mystic. Do you see even the sutras? More understanding. Tirtha's wife certainly has more courage than Tirtha, because at least she mentions my name, that she has been learning under my discipleship for 13 years. Tirtha could not prevent her, because she is no more with him, he is living with another woman, a girlfriend, that girlfriend was also here. He also does not mention, again comes the Indian mystic. But if they come back, they will receive the same love. I don't take note of such stupid fear. What is their fear? Their fear is that my name makes them hindered by government. They cannot work in Germany, in Italy, if the government knows that they have been my people. But selling your soul so cheap, I have only tears for them. And now they themselves are closing the door. From my side it is open, but the things that they are saying to other sannyasins, that drop sannyas, it is dangerous. 21 countries have passed laws that Bhagwan cannot enter there. Your job is at risk, and it is true. Few teachers have lost their job. A professor has lost the job just because he accepted me as his master. But he was a courageous man. He went to the court and asked that, is there any law that prevents me from being a disciple of Bhagwan? Is it in any way a hindrance in my teachership in the college? I have not been teaching his philosophy. I am not even capable of teaching it. But my association with him has taken away my job. There are almost 2 million sannyasins in the world. I have told them not to wear orange clothes, not to wear the mala, because I don't want anyone to suffer because of me. But anybody else trying to persuade sannyasins to drop sannyas, now what is left as far as sannyas is concerned? I have told them to forget about the orange clothes. Throw away your malas in the ocean. Only meditation is the essence, just keep to it. And at least nobody can even suspect that you are a meditator. It is your innermost center Manisha it is both. The story is a master's compassion and equanimity in face of his trust being abused. And it is also a beautiful illustration of benefiting from being with a master without being needy and dependent. Yes, Manisha, certainly it is my voice. That you have heard in nonsense say, he was such a good man. I miss him even now. You don't know perhaps nobody else in the world has missed so many people as I have missed. am carrying wounds from the hands of my own people. But my love is as alive as ever. Because it was never dependent on what they do. It was never conditional. It is simply that I love. I am love. So whoever comes close to me can bring the nectar of love and silence and peace. I don't make any demand that you have to fulfill this. I'm just like an open sky. Manisha has asked another question too. Beloved Bhagwan, does a disciple need to need her master and to be conscious of needing him? No, Manisha. Need is not the language of Zen. Love is the language. You need things, but it is a strange and insane world. Here people love things. Somebody loves a car, somebody loves a horse, somebody loves a rented bicycle. In this insane world, people need each other and reduce each other into things. The moment you need someone, you have taken away the dignity of the person. You have reduced him into a commodity. In India, the woman is called Istri Dhan. A feminine wealth. And when a girl gets married, the word that is used is dan, donation. These are ugly words. You cannot donate a person. You cannot purchase a person. It is only in theory that we think slavery has disappeared from the world. It exists in thousands of ways, in different spaces. At least don't ask from a master to be needed. and anybody worth the salt, if he is a master, does not need a disciple. He loves to share, and he is grateful to all those who are receptive. Neither the disciple is in need, nor the master is in need. Need is the language applicable to things. At least here in this temple, all are loved. Nobody is needed. And the difference has to be understood. Need becomes a prison, and love is freedom. Need puts chains on you, and love gives you wings. The bamboos are whispering amongst themselves. They want a little laughter. Little Ernie's parents have invited the local Protestant priest and his wife to tea. Ernie has been told to be on his best behavior and to say please and thank you at all times. But Ernie is having trouble. And by the end of the afternoon is almost ready to burst. Would you like some more tea, Ernest? Asked his mother. No, says Ernie. No? What? Dear? Asked his mother with his threatening look. She prompts him again, no what? To which Ernie replies, no more fucking tea. The traveling salesman is too tired to continue on in the dark country night. He sees a little farmhouse by the side of the road and decides to seek some comfort and rest there. Can you put me up for the night? Stanley asks the farmer. Sure, but you will have to sleep with my son, says the farmer. My God, exclaims Stanley, I'm in the wrong joke. It is evening. In a bar in Newark, a young long-haired guy with a guitar and a high-pitched nasal voice is singing My Old California Home. An old man in the corner bows down his head and quietly weeps. A lady sitting near him leans over and says, "Excuse me, old timer, but are you a Californian?" "No, lady," sobs the man, "I am a musician." Have faith and you shall be healed, cries the preacher at the revival meeting. A woman on crutches and a man come forward. The preacher asks, "What is your name, my good woman?" "I am Mrs. Smith," she replies, "and I have had to walk with crutches all my life." "Well, Mrs. Smith," says the preacher, "go behind that screen and pray." Turning to the man, he asks, "What is your name?" "My name is Samuel," he replies, "and I have always spoken with a split all right, Mr. Samuel," says the preacher, "go behind that screen with Mrs. Smith and pray." Then the preacher raises his arm and says, "Witness the miracle. Mrs. Smith, throw one crutch over the screen. The audience gasps as it sails over." "Mrs. Smith," cries the preacher, "now the other one." The crowd cheers as the second crutch appears. Encouraged, the preacher commands Mr. Samuel, "Say something in a loud, clear voice." Samuel answers, "Mithuk Hamid just fell on her arms." The first drum and everybody goes crazy. Nothing less will do. everybody becomes silent. Close your eyes and gather your energy inward. No movement. Just be. A single pointed consciousness. And you have taken the quantum leap from mind to no mind. Deeper, deeper. There is no fear, go deeper. It is lonely, it is silent, but it is immensely blissful. This is the lotus the Buddhas have been talking. This is the secret that can be indicated but cannot be explained. At this moment, you are at the very heartbeat of existence. Let it become your very life style. With it comes a tremendous spring of life, of joy, of blessings, of love. It is a dance which is multidimensional. Every creativity comes out of this space. Poetry, music, sculptures, all that is great is born through this womb, the womb of inner silence. To make it deeper, rupees give another beast for everyone to die. Just let the body breathe, but you go on and on inward. This is the sacred temple of your being. Out of it arises every virtue, and if you forget it, your life is meaningless. 1001 roses blossom in this silence. If you forget it, your life is just a dread from cradle to the grave. It is all up to you whether you want to live in a desert or in a garden. Whether you want to be just bones and a skeleton or a divine consciousness. Rupe, give the beach so that all those who have died can come back to life. Resurrect but don't forget the moment you have been in. And don't forget the space that you have traveled. Don't forget that nothing is more precious than your own being. This remembrance makes you all a Buddha. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, so good.
Can we celebrate with so many Buddhas?
Yes.